ghost of a smile, and I had a feeling that he regarded the adored object's conduct as not at all the thing, as Elspeth would say. He said something to her, and she shrugged and replied offhand, at which Daoud, after a long look at me, bowed to her and retired, followed by his gang, Mighty Glum. They'd been looking forward to watching Yando take flight. Ulaba was in no hurry to put him out of his misery. She stood on the brink of the trap, mocking him in a voice husky with excitement, while he woke the echoes with his pleas and curses, writhing so that the cage jerked and swung like a cork on a string. A diverting sight, but I was more intent on studying her face, lips parted, laughing in delight as she toyed with the chain, drawing the long pin ever so slowly, and then, with a last taunt, suddenly whipping it free. The cage flew open, spilling him out, and now I saw that leaving his hands free had been the exquisite refinement of cruelty, for he was able to grab the edge of the cage even as he fell. And there he was, clinging for dear life as he swung over the giddy, mist-streaked abyss, shrieking his ugly head off. Talk about the female of the species, if you like. Ulaba cried in glee, clapping her hands, fairly revelling in the brute's anguish. And now she sweetened his last moments with a gesture which I doubt even Rana Valona or the Emperor Tsutsi or my little Apache charmer Sonsi Aray would have thought of. And they knew how to tickle their male victims, I can tell you. She leaned over, jeering down into that glaring, agonized face, and with slow deliberation undid the laces of her leather tunic and let it fall, leaving her naked but for a loincloth. She puckered her lips at him in mockery of kissing and told me to replace the trapdoor. "Slowly, to give him time to think," murmurs she. So I did as I was told, lowering the door gently. It couldn't close entirely flush because of the suspending rope, but enough to cut off the horrid sight and sound of that wailing wretch, clinging in terror until pain and cold should loosen his hold. Ulaba turned to me, her mouth shaking as if with an ague, and there was a light in her eyes which a lady novelist would certainly have called unholy. She flung her arms round my neck, pulling my face down to hers, gasping what I could only assume were indelicate suggestions, for in her agitation the poor thing was babbling in Amharic. "Let's make hay while she's hot," thinks I, and swung her up in my arms, unbreaching myself skilfully with one hand while clasping that lovely trembling flesh with the other, planted her firmly in the saddle to the accompaniment of gratifying squeals, and was making her the happiest of women as we subsided onto the mattress. You never can tell, I've found, what different women will prefer as a stimulating accompaniment to Le Gallop. I think of dear Lola with her hairbrush, Jean Dan with her canes, Mandeville booted and spurred, Cleone humming French nursery rhymes, and my own dear wife, gossiping relentlessly to the last blissful moment and beyond. Each to her taste, and God bless her, say I, but going at it like a similar widow while a former admirer is dying by inches under the bed is not, I think, in the best of taste. Not that I gave a damn. Flashy in extatio has no thought to spare for tottering thrones or collapsing empires, let alone beastly rivals collecting their well-deserved rations. Speaking of whom, when we'd exhausted our rapture and recovered sufficiently to raise the trap for a look-see, Yando had gone. If you take a look at my map, you'll see how our road lay, from Ad Abaga, southwest, to Lake Tana. Easy riding for the most part, while over the mountains to eastward, Napier's army was grinding its way through those impossible highlands of huge peaks and deep chasms, carving a road along precipices, round mountain tops, and across rock-strewn plateau. Horse, foot, guns, mules, and elephants, growing lighter and hungrier by the mile as they abandoned gear and clothing and camp followers, pressing on desperately beyond hope of return in the race for Magdala, while far to the south Theodore's dwindling army and motley rabble of prisoners were closing on the capital from Debra Tabor, with fewer miles to travel but hampered by the ponderous artillery dragged in his train, including his mighty mortar, Sevastopol. I don't know which of them, the British general or the mad monarch, deserves the higher marks for leadership and determination, and sheer ability in taking an army through and over hellish country.